Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, over there in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's Scott Rafferty, Scott of Sporting News. Scott, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Still in Charlotte. Yeah, I'm doing well, man. It's been a crazy and fun season to date. I feel like whenever I feel like I have a good idea of what's going on, something crazy happens, and then I'm back to square one. But
Wait, who brought you back to square one of late? Who brought you back?
I don't know. As soon as I feel like I have a good sense of a team, they lose a bad game or someone gets injured, I feel like the season's just kind of all over the place.
Give me an example. Who of late? Who you've thrown it out for?
I don't think that Philly cracked the code against Jokic and the Nuggets. I do think that was a very interesting game, though.
Okay.
I guess
why?
I'll just put it there. I mean, the way that they defended Jokic, again, I don't know if there's many teams that can kind of replicate the whole, like, PJ Tucker defending him with physicality, having Embiid kind of, you know, playing the no man's land kind of role, protecting the rim and everything. There's not many teams that can do that, but I just thought that was very interesting. Like, Jokic looked a little bit flustered. I feel like if they did that again, he's such a smart player that he probably figures it out. But again, I think that kind of just goes back to, I don't think, like, any team is kind of unbeatable right now. It just feels like there's a lot in the air, I guess.
I would agree. I mean, I think there are probably still like 11 teams you could say could win the title this year, which is pretty wild. I'm around there. I have to do a redo, but I'm pretty sure I was that when I was doing the list a few weeks back was 11. If everything's healthy, it's like you can still throw the Clippers on there. You can still, I won't throw the Lakers on there because I refuse to believe that they can be healthy for that amount of time necessary to do that. But I don't know. We'll talk about the Lakers in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. But is there anybody in the West up to, because the Nuggets might be the number one seed in the West, they're probably going to go in, barring no injuries, knock on wood, be the number one seed going into the West, and probably the favorites, I think, coming out just because of how deep that team is. But it's also weird because, like, Bones Highland's coming up and, like, they're going to get a first round pick for him. So yeah. I don't really know, because that was, like, one of the under the radar things that happened this offseason for them, where Connolly left because they were not going to pay what he wanted to stick around, so they just promoted from within with Calvin Booth. And it's just kind of one of those okay, the Hawks did something similar where it was like, we're going to contend, we're going to really go for it, and we're not breaking this up. And it's like, we're also going to quietly move Kevin Huerter for Justin Holiday and Mo Harkless while also trading for DeJounte Murray. See, we're going for it, but we're also not all the way going for it. So I don't know. It's really hard for me to get a feel on how much I believe in the Nuggets. But is there anyone in the West who can replicate what PJ Tucker and Joel Embiid did to Jokic inside in the playoffs?
I don't know. Like, yeah. They're a pretty unique team in that perspective. I mean, the Warriors, he still put up huge numbers against them in the playoffs last year. I feel like the Warriors can at least do it with, like, Draymond Green guarding him. Kevon Looney's obviously not the, like, backline rim protector that Joel Embiid is, but, like, you have that kind of that strength on Embiid and that size underneath the basket. But again, like, I don't really know what to make of it, because again, like, Jokic is so smart. And there were still times in that game where, like, clearly he was flustered. Like, he had, I can't remember, eight turnovers, I think it was, and a couple of them were real head scratches. Like, you just don't see that from Jokic. And I feel like he's such a smart player that if they do that again, like, if this was a seven-game series with the 76ers and Doc Rivers breaks this out in game 2 or 3, has Jokic figured it out in game 4 or 5 and suddenly you don't really have an answer for them?
Are they your favorite in the West?
Probably. But even then, like, I the defense, I feel like I'm just not sold on the defense, and like, they don't have kind of that versatility that I feel like a lot of contenders lately have had, and that they can just change, do so many different schemes, which you really need when you're going through 4 different rounds and playing 4 different opponents. So I do worry about that a little bit from that perspective. But you won't, I mean, you'll struggle to find someone who loves Jokic as much as I do. Huge believer in him. He's proven himself in the playoffs too. Like, the guy has just been incredible every single year in the playoffs. The Grizzlies intrigue me, but that's another team where it's like, I feel like teams are just going to completely load up the paint in the playoffs, right? Knowing that Jaw wants to get there, they're going to help off of Steven Adams. I think they'll probably dare Jaren Jackson Jr. to shoot a little bit until they can kind of prove him otherwise. And then you're really relying on, like, Desmond Bane, who's awesome. That's probably the one guy that you're, you know, playing really tight, not letting him get open. But I feel like there's just a big question mark for almost, like, all the top teams in the West. Even the Clippers, you know, like, Kawhi and Paul George not playing a ton. They've looked better lately, but that's obviously a huge question mark. The Kings are up there. The Warriors have been awful on the road this season. Can't pick up a win there. I don't know what to make of them. It feels, and then you get into the mix of teams that's like the Mavs, the Suns, the Pelicans. It's just, I feel like it's all over the place.
It's funny, like I said before the year, I think the Mavs are going to the finals. People just, like, really forgot that the Mavs were in the Western Conference Finals this past year with Brunson, obviously, in the fold, and they lost him for nothing, and that was rough. But I think they're going to, we'll talk about Dorian Finney-Smith and what they're able to do there, but it's going to happen, because I've compared the Luka stuff to the first time LeBron was in Cleveland, right? Yeah. Where he just needed that opening where the West kind of opened up with back in the day with Detroit opening up for, and that dynasty kind of ending, and LeBron taking that spot, the Warriors kind of fighting for their lives in the play-in area, and we'll see where they're at. But, like, I don't think there is anyone in the West in a 7-game series that is looking forward to this iteration of Luka and a bunch of veteran shooters and feeling pretty good about things, because I think they're going to get older. I think they're going to do something at the deadline that helps them, and Luka's going to be the best player in every series that he plays in the West. And I think what we've seen from Luka to this point and him getting this team to the Western Conference Finals last year, these guys eventually make the finals sooner rather than later. Like, when you're a top 3, top 4 talent and it kind of opens up like this where it's like, oh, anybody can win, then it's like, all right, the best player in the conference or having the best season takes care of that. And I don't know, man. I think the defense come on. I love the veteran shooting. Like, Reggie Bullock was not going to shoot that poorly all season long, and you look at it, and I don't know if Jaden Hardy's going to be part of their playoff rotation or anything, but they know what their identity is. You talk about, like, who you know and who you don't know. I know exactly who the Mavericks are. Like, when you watch them every night, they've been the exact same team the last 2 years, even with Jalen Brunson not in the fold. They know exactly how they want to play. They know how they want to beat teams. Josh Green knows exactly what he's supposed to do every time on the court. I don't know. I think they're a team that knows what to do, and I trust them more in the half court than the Grizzlies. Like, if you give me Grizzlies, Mavs, in the Western Conference Finals, I'm taking the Mavs. Like, I trust Luka and this group far more in the half court and close games than I do Memphis. I think Memphis is fool's gold. I think we're going to just run over this over and over again in the regular season where they gobble up the wins. They're a lot of fun, and then they run into the wall come playoff time. I'm more optimistic about the Pelicans' immediate future if Zion's ever healthy. I think B.I. and company have a better shot of really breaking through in the West, and CJ and those guys than Memphis. I love Memphis, watching them. They're a lot of fun. Like, when Joss stops on a dime with passes like that, like, it's fun. Jaren Jackson bullying people inside, like, that's fun. If you're asking me who I trust more in the Western Conference come playoff time, it's not them. It's Dallas.
But I think the interesting thing about the Grizzlies, they have the assets to make a splashy move if they want to ahead of the trade deadline. That's the interesting thing to me. And I don't really know who that player is. Like, I know there's people want to go after OG for them. Obviously, defensively, he would help. He'd fit in perfectly with them. Offensively, I just don't know if he gives them quite enough juice. I think Pascal Siakam probably solves, like, more of what they're looking for. But I also don't know if Siakam, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Steven Adams really makes sense. Maybe if you move like Jaren Jackson Jr. to the center and then play Pascal at the four, but then obviously Steven Adams is just so important being able to defend opposing centers and what he does on the offensive glass and everything like that. So I think they're a fascinating team going to the trade deadline. But to be clear, do you think, like, are you sold on like this version of the Mavericks going to the finals, or are you expecting them to like make a move and put them in that position?
Like, I could see them trading for Bojan, who we'll talk about in a second, and flipping him for Finney Smith and maybe a first, and we'll see if Troy Weaver lowers his price on what he's going to ask for Bojan. But like, Luka's number two right now in real plus minus. He's only behind Jason Tatum, and it's close. Jason Tatum's number one in ESPN's real plus minus. He's number two. Jokic is number three. Embiid four. LeBron five. Offensive real plus minus in the league, he is number two, right behind Damian Lillard. And they're almost neck and neck. He's played 46 games. I know he's going to play every game. The dude's built like a tank. I'm not worried about injuries with this Dallas team. Yeah, I think they just need another shooter. I think they could get a better rim protector and move on. Like, the Christian Wood stuff is weird, and I don't know how that's going to go come playoff time and if that's ever going to be a perfect fit and I'm ever going to really love their big rotation. But I also don't think it matters if Luka's on for three straight series and they have the shooting where it's like, oh, Reggie Bullock shot 45% from three this series. Jalen Hardy shot 40% this series. I don't know. I know exactly what they're going to try and do come playoff time, and I think it's going to win multiple series, and then Luka's just, I think, played at an unbelievable level that I think we're even discounting to this point.
He's a cheat code. I feel like he just has an answer for everything at this point. Mm. Like, he's even, over the last couple, I remember like 2 seasons ago, I wrote about him kind of like starting to pick on people, like in pick and rolls, and then attacking them in the post. And it was like he was giving you like a taste of that. And then now it's just gone to the point where he's among the league leaders in like post up scoring. Like, he'll do it every single night to no matter who. He can basically just destroy anyone in any situation because he can either beat them in the post, or he's too shifty for them, or he just has that step back. It does really feel like he's just a cheat code, and he's got an answer for
which is perfect for playoff basketball. Like, the post-ups and everything else, like, when it gets tight, Luka's going to draw those fouls, or he's going to hit it. Like, it's what he did to DeAndre Hunter, like, the Hawks played the Mavs a few weeks ago, and something I jotted down was just, like, DeAndre is a good perimeter defender. He's a good on-ball defender. Like, he's fine, but he's not very big, and he was tasked with guarding Luka because he was the best that the Hawks could throw at him. And Luka had like 16 on him in the first quarter. Like, it was just one of those where Luka, the post-ups and everything else, where DeAndre drew a couple fouls, but he's looking around like, what am I supposed to do? Like, the Luka is just, like you said, he is 1,000% a cheat code. And I don't know. That's my gut. You heard it here first, January 31st on this very podcast, that I think the Mavs make it to the finals. I don't think they win. I think the best team comes out of the East, whoever that is, but I do think they make it. Speaking of the Clippers, though, I went back to Atlanta over the weekend, took my wife to her first Hawks game in person. So she always is like walking back and forth like, oh, how's DeJounte doing? She was very upset that Kevin Huerter got traded. That was her guy for the last couple of years. So that was rough this year. But especially when I told her who we got for Kevin Huerter and how that all unfolded, it's not great. But Hawks lost late. Kawhi shut the door on the Hawks in that one. And it was cool to see the Clippers in person because they're different. They're another different team where they don't close to the point guard. Like, Reggie Jackson, he loves Metallica. Got to see him jam out during an intermission where he was really, really having a lot of fun with that. And Terrence Mann playing important minutes for them right now. Luke Kennard had a good quarter. He's healthy. It was the healthiest they've looked in a while. And they look like a real contender. It's just they need that last spot. And you can see, whether it's Mike Conley or whoever, they're really, really close. So I think it's odd to me that there's so much focus on the Lakers at this point, where I'm like, I think if the Clippers are this healthy come playoff time and this group and Kawhi is playing like this, their upside is significantly higher than the Lakers and what they can do come playoff time. Do you agree with where the Clippers are at right now?
Yeah, I agree. They were my pick to come out of the West at the start of the season. Mm. I think the way that Kawhi came out, which on one hand wasn't a surprise given he just missed all of last season with an ACL injury, but he did go off to a slow start. I mean, we do at Sporting News, we do our, like, I want to say 3 or 4 times a season, we do our check-in of like who are the top 30 players in the league, and we all rank them, 10 of us or whatever. Mm. And Kawhi, we did it just before Christmas, and Kawhi was one I feel like we were the most all over the place on. I think I had him highest as the 10th best player in the league. And I was projecting a little bit, giving him more of a benefit of the doubt of, I think he's, this is just going to take him some time to kind of get back to his form. But someone had him as low as 28. Like, that's how all over the place we were on him. And I think, you know, it's very clear that this is a team, they're super deep, but they are only going to go as far as their two stars can take them. So it was one of those things where, like, I feel like we just had to wait and see how Kawhi was playing. And he's been awesome over the last, I want to say, like, 4 to 6 weeks.
His last like 10 games, he's at 28, or basically 29 points, shooting 9% from the line, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, shooting 44% from 3, and 58% from the field. And 36 minutes, that's the other big thing, he's playing 36 minutes tonight.
Yeah, he's basically putting up numbers that he was the season before he got injured. Like, that's
a totally NBA. Different Clippers team.
Yeah. So then you plug in Paul George, who's had, I feel like, an underrated good season. Played in more games than kind of, because we did our all-star picks the other day, and I think he's played in more games than I kind of thought. He's having a good season. And then, yeah, you add the depth around them. I am fascinated to see kind of how they approach this trade deadline, though, because it does feel like they almost have too much depth sometimes. And I do wonder if they do flip some of those guys for really a point guard or a center, feels like what they need. Zubac is great for them, but he's really their only center they have on the roster. So do they kind of look to get him some help there? And obviously the point guard, it feels like they're just constantly linked to a point guard. They tried John Wall, hasn't gone really what they expected. Reggie Jackson was great a couple seasons ago, hasn't really been able to get back to that level. So I am fascinated to see kind of how they approach this trade deadline, because it does feel like they are trending upwards. And it does feel like they're a move away from really kind of, I feel like, getting back to, oh, this is the best team in the West.
Yeah, because when you look at their lineups that like have the most success, you would be surprised to see where they come. So it's like, this one's not surprising to me. And this is their best lineup. What would you guess their best five-man lineup to this point with at minimum 50 possessions together?
I have no idea, because I feel like they've had so many guys in and out that it could be anything.
Okay.
I mean, I would like to think Kawhi, Paul George are in there. I wouldn't be surprised if Zubac is in there.
He is in there.
Kennard
is in there.
Okay. Norman Powell.
No, close. Terrence Mann.
Okay.
That's their best five.
Okay.
Plus 24.6. I don't know. I don't know who makes the most sense, because Conley has been healthy to this point. Conley, John Wall, like, I just wouldn't do it for these injury, like, these older injury prone guys, where I'm like, you already brought in a version of that. If you're going to make a trade for a point guard at this point, it's someone you have to be able to count on, because Kawhi is always just a ticking time bomb, and you're just, I don't know if that makes as much sense to me. Do you, based on what you've seen from Conley this year, do you think he fits with what the Clippers would try and do, and do you think he'd fit in nicely?
I think he'd fit in really well. I mean, Mike Conley kind of, I think Mike Conley's a great example of a guy who maybe not at this point of his career is not as good on ball, but he can still like get a decent shot for himself out of a pick and roll. But he's also comfortable playing off ball, being a spot up shooter, and he's a good ball mover. He's a smart player. And I think with a team built around Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, who aren't, you know, they're not pass first guys. They can both pass, but they're not going to like pick you apart in like a Luka Doncic or Jokic way. I think it is important that you do have someone kind of at that position who can kind of fill in some of those gaps. So I think Conley would help. I think he's the kind of point guard they need. But to your point, he is on the older side. He has had some injury issues. The thing is, like, I think he'd probably be easier to get than like a Fred VanVleet. Although I feel like Fred VanVleet would actually be a better overall fit. And the other problem with Freddie is that he's probably going to be a free agent in the offseason. So if the Clippers did trade for him, it's either a 6-month rental, which maybe they don't care if it results in a championship. But either that, or you're basically signing up to pay him what appears to be $30+ million a year. And this is already, you know, they're already paying a ton of money for this roster. So then that's just going to kind of go through the roof if that's the case.
And then the other wrinkle to Fred VanVleet is he signed with Clutch. This week he fired his agent, and now immediately people were like, oh, LeBron, Clutch. Like, because he makes sense for the Lakers too. Like, Fred VanVleet makes sense for both teams. But personally, I would just rather Fred VanVleet wind up in Clipperland. Like, I think that's more fun. I think that's more, I'm more optimistic about what the Clippers could be come playoff time with them being healthy than the Lakers. Are you in the same boat? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, we did our top 30 players list. Anthony Davis and LeBron James were ahead of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So I think if they were in that series, you can make the argument that they have the two best players in the series. But I still think Kawhi, if he can get back to what he was before, is a top five player in the league or around that. He's just incredible on both ends of the court. And I think they can kind of do enough. Like, they have the size that they can throw against LeBron and AD. Not that they're necessarily going to stop them, but I think they can probably make it a little bit more difficult than the other way around. Mm-hmm. And I also just like their depth. Like, the surrounding pieces make so much more sense with the Clippers than it does with the Lakers to me.
I would agree.
And Ty Lue, by the way. Ty Lue is one of the best coaches in the league. And I, when it push comes to shove in the playoffs, like, I trust him to make the right moves.
Yeah, I would agree. Is there a better option? We've mentioned Fred VanVleet and Conley. Is there another option that you've thought about for the Clippers that people haven't necessarily talked about? But if you're Lawrence Frank, and I know you think about that a lot, or if you're Lawrence Frank, Scott Rafferty, who are you targeting?
I do like Fred VanVleet for them. I know another player who's been mentioned is Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
I think if it was Kyle Lowry like 3 years ago, I think that would make a lot of sense. But I just don't know if this version
What's
of Kyle Lowry.
What's real with Kyle Lowry this year?
What's
real with Kyle Lowry this year? Why are you kind of down more on him this year? What's changed with his game?
I mean, he's just at this point of his career. Like, he's just not as efficient of a scorer. I mean, it still feels like he draws like five charges a game just because that's what he's always going to do. But it just doesn't feel like he's making the same impact on both ends of the court, which, again, is not a surprise given his age and mileage and all that. But again, like, I think the Kyle Lowry of 2-3 years ago when he was still kind of playing at an all-star level, he really was like the perfect point guard for kind of any contending team just because of what he does on both ends of the court. But yeah, I just don't know if that version kind of puts him over the top. But it is interesting to me that it does feel like a lot of the conversation is around point guards. But I do wonder, again, if they kind of pursue a center more than a point guard. I know they like to play small, so they either play Zubac or they kind of just downsize and play small ball,
which
will work against a lot of teams. I wonder, I know we're going to talk about Naz Reid, but like that's another guy, you know, who seems like he could be gettable. And I feel like he'd be a great addition to a lot of teams.
I'm less concerned about guys like that, like the backup bigs. Like, you can find them. They exist. Like, they exist. There's always a Dwayne Dedman around the corner. Like, you just call around a little bit. You don't have to give up a lot for those guys. I just wouldn't do that in today's game. I wouldn't. If that's your, it's like the way I look at backup bigs now, I look at closers in baseball or just bullpen arms where you're like, look, if the last thing that you need, if the thing that people criticize your team for is that you need bullpen help, that means you're in really good shape. Like, the hard stuff is everything else around it. Easy stuff is like the bullpen. Like, you can make additions to the deadline. You can find some bullpen arms. Teams are always willing to give up bullpen arms. Teams are always willing to give up some backup bigs like Rashawn Holmes, whoever it is. Like, there are guys on these rosters all around the league who aren't playing, who could just play like their guys in the G League. Like, I don't know. I'm not as concerned about that. I'd be more concerned about guys on ball, the guards who you trust, who can get Kawhi and Paul George the ball, come play off them. Like, Lowry, like, he's shooting 33%, so his shot has not been there from three this year. His on-off numbers aren't great. But I look at all that, and I'm like, this is actually, like, what you want if you're Los Angeles, because you're like, price might not be that crazy for Kyle Lowry at this point, because he's not playing his best basketball. He's 36, and it's a different kind of value proposition than like a John Wall type, who's just so much of it was built on athleticism and things like that. Kyle Lowry, I mean, he won a title with Kawhi just 3 years ago. Yep. They have familiarity, bring him into the locker room. He's played a bunch of playoff games, meaningful playoff games. I like that the most, where you wouldn't have to give up as much as you would for a Fred VanVleet. I obviously he'd be a better help to them, but I think Kyle Lowry, with what they would have to give up, might be able to be a better fit and then still have enough to get that backup big to relieve Zubac or just give him the versatility, because I still don't even know if they would play him over Batum in that backup five role. It's really just matchup based, where you wish you had that option if you need to night or one series.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think there's obviously the injury part to this as well, right? Like, what if Zubac goes down with a sprained ankle at the wrong point, at the late end of the season for them? Then what does that look like?
Marcus Morris is probably playing the five, right?
Probably. I mean, this is the thing that the Celtics are dealing with right now. Like, I'm fascinated by, you know, all the reporting points towards them being interested in Jakob Poeltl, who is one of the most sought-after centers right now, I think, which I think for them is fascinating when they already have Robert Williams III and Al Horford. Yeah. It's just obviously it's injury stuff, right? It's the possibility that one of them gets injured for an extended period of time and they need a more reliable center. So
I just don't believe, like, the two first round picks, I don't know what Jakob Poeltl is going to go for, but I'm very, very curious to see what the Spurs actually get for him if they move him.
Yeah, same. I mean, they're interested. The Raptors are apparently interested. They've been linked to him, what feels like, since he's been gone, basically.
But that makes no sense. Like, why would the Raptors trade? Like, why would they be buyers at this point? Why would they give up a first for Jakob Poeltl? Like, that makes no sense.
They're impossible to read. Yeah. I know all the reporting's basically been like, we'll have to wait to see how this road trip goes that they're on right now to know if they're going to be buyers or sellers. And we're, what, like a week and a half, 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, and it still feels like all the reporting's the same, and we're halfway through this road trip. Like, at some point, they're going to have to make a decision.
Well, OG's off, right? Like, because of the injury, OG's out.
I don't know.
Do we not think so? Yeah.
I have no idea. I have no idea what to make of them. It seems like there's nothing coming out about Pascal that I've read, right? Yeah. Like, it seems like Pascal's probably a safe bet to stay put. Gary Trent Jr. seems like if someone does get traded, he's the most obvious candidate. And then it feels like it's kind of just up in the air with Fred VanVleet and OG based on kind of all the reporting and everything like that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess they do something. And then you have the other thing, which is Nick Nurse might be gone at the end of the year. Like, his contract's up. So he might be out the door. And, man, that'd be rough because you would still consider him, what, top five coach? Have you lost? Has he gone down the rankings because of how this year has gone for you at all? Or do you not put a lot of the blame on him this year?
I honestly, the longer that I do this job, I try and not be as reactive. I feel like it's really easy to kind of, stuff like this happens. They have a really bad 50 games and suddenly, like, you move Nick Nurse down the rankings. I lean more towards him what's happened the last few years and what he's shown. So I still probably would have him in kind of like that top five range. I feel like he's kind of proven it.
I wonder which team, like, is okay with their coach and fires their coach just because, oh, Nick Nurse is available. We have a chance to get a top five coach. Like, what are we doing here? Because you don't see that very much with coaches where teams are like jumping over themselves to hire this one guy. And I don't know. My gut is like, Nate, there's no chance Nate McMillan is coaching the Atlanta Hawks next year. Like negative 0% chance that Nate is coaching. Like, I'm not convinced that Nate is the coach come playoff time if the Hawks make it there. Like, some of the conspiracy theory, I hope I'm not right here. I would not be surprised if it's Ime Udoka is the coach of the Hawks sooner rather than later. Like, I would just, there's a Spurs connection. Landry Fields is running this. He grew up in the Spurs front office. Pop and Ime are still close. Like, it didn't get hired in Brooklyn, but let me tell you, the media market in Atlanta and the Hawks market is not as controversial, not as big as that Brooklyn market. And I don't know. That's my gut on where things go in Atlanta. But I mean, I don't know. That's a future pod. But Nick Nurse, I don't think, is going to take the Hawks job. I don't think he wants to dive into the Trae Young coaching sweepstakes. I think it's a hard pass for him on that one. But I don't know. We'll see where Nick Nurse winds up. But that'd be interesting if the Raptors did actually let him walk and what they would do following that. Naz Reid, who I very much enjoy watching him play basketball, is he, like, the thing about Naz Reid, he's someone that I'm not sure closes in any playoff games. Like, I'm not sure if he's that guy, but I think he's also someone who could swing a playoff series if you have him, and, like, they are super small, and you're able to just pull, like, I'm trying to think of, like, the perfect example of who's the perfect team for Naz, where it's like they have 36 minutes of this big and then they have 12 minutes of Naz Reid, and you're like, I don't know what you do for the 48 minutes with these two. Like, this is just going to be a rough seven game series. Who do you think is, like, the perfect big for him to, like, back up if the Wolves do move on from him? Who would you pair him behind?
I mean, we mentioned the Clippers. The Nets do come to mind of a team that Nick Claxton's been awesome this season.
Yeah.
But beyond him, like, he's their only real center.
That's who I had. Like, Nick Claxton for 36 minutes and then 12 minutes of Naz Reid was just...
Yeah. And the potential of, like, pairing him with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and the spacing that he has. Also Ben Simmons, by the way, because Ben Simmons is going to play a role in this team, whether you like it or not, in the playoffs. And he's going to have to be better than he has been lately.
But so he's on the Naz Reid trade. You're not doing Naz Reid for Ben Simmons.
who says no? But the spacing he provides as a shooter, you know, that would open up stuff for Ben Simmons as well, which I think is important. So they're an obvious one to me. I also think, like, Denver's a team to watch, right? They're, yeah, they're in need of a backup center. It feels kind of like that. I know I've seen some people kind of float out the idea of them going after Plumlee or something like that in Charlotte. So, but they're another team I feel like needs a backup center, and he kind of on paper makes sense for them.
Plumlee feels more like Denver, and Naz Reid feels more like Brooklyn to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And that, those are both probably fine. Like Plumlee's been playing well. I mean, you've been living and dying by Charlotte tape all year long, Scott. You've been grinding the Charlotte tape. You're like, wow, this is fun. Like, I'm enjoying what Charlotte's doing this year.
Yeah.
Like, have you been to the arena? What's it like right now? For the
Honestly, I haven't been to a game this season.
Okay.
I haven't been. I feel like every single time I've thought about going to a game, something's come up and I haven't been able to go.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think I've been missing too much based on the way that the season has gone. But, you know, Jalen McDaniels is in the news right now. It feels like a lot of teams are interested in him ahead of the trade deadline and the possibility. You know, he's in that weird situation where he's coming off of a rookie contract, but he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. So what does Charlotte do with him? But, it hasn't been a memorable season to date for the Hornets.
They're, I think, in the worst position of anyone in the league. I think they have the worst immediate future.
Well, they have LaMelo, which I think, you know, that's a pretty...
For how much longer? Like,
well, we
how much
that.
Longer is LaMelo putting up with this? Like, this is, like, if you're LaMelo, you're looking around, you're like, I don't know. Like, we're, like, 3 to 4 years... Like, you have to do a full teardown now. You don't have a choice. So then, by the time they go through a rebuild, LaMelo will be up for his extension. Then if, you give LaMelo the Supermax, and then it's like, what else do you have around LaMelo? You're, like, you're not attracting free agents. Like, it's not a free agent destination. So... I don't know. I think the timelines are now weird with LaMelo.
It's definitely weird. They feel like a team that's going to be a pretty obvious seller at the trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
Giving up Terry Rozier, getting something back for him.
Gordon
Hayward.
Are just hanging up, though. Like, Mitch Kupchak's calling. Like, we're selling. And they're like, no, Mitch, we don't care. We do not care. We're focused on Conley, Naz Reid. Like, what are you doing? We don't want him. No. No Terry Rozier. We don't want him.
Yeah, it's not a great situation, but I will say at least they do have LaMelo Ball, who I'm
Who's
pretty
awesome.
Confident.
I love watching LaMelo.
Yeah, he's a great player, and there's a lot worse people you can build around. But whether or not you have the confidence that they can build something around him that's going to be competitive, I don't know. But
how did Mike D'Antoni not become the coach? Like, that was it.
I don't know.
Mike D'Antoni with LaMelo Ball should have been like a no-brainer. Just do that. What are we doing? Don't overthink it. Just hire D'Antoni with LaMelo.
That was another weird situation. The coaching hire for them, that was that feels like there was so many crazy things that's happened over the last like 12 months in the NBA that like everyone forgets that they hired someone. They were basically like, actually, I'm good. And they hired the guy that they fired a couple seasons ago. I don't know. But this all changes in a few months' time if they get the number one pick in the draft. Or even the number two pick for all we, you know.
They feel like a Scoot Henderson team. I think the Spurs, like I said before the year, the Spurs were getting Victor Wembanyama. And I'm sticking to my guns that the Rockets is the worst case scenario for the league. They're like, no. We can't get enough. We cannot do this anymore. Like, the Rockets are a train wreck. And you're like, I don't want that. And it would feel better. I think as NBA fans, we would be like, oh, that's awesome. Like, good for the Spurs, because it's like been really sad to watch them just drift off into not even mediocrity. That's where they went from. They went from contenders to mediocre, and now they're just swirling around just the dumpster fire status that I don't like, because I did not grow up with the Spurs just being horrific at basketball for multiple years in a row. So no, Victor in San Antonio should be what NBA fans are all rooting for, because I think that would be the most fun. And I wonder if Pop sticks around for a little bit longer if he gets Victor. I wonder how that works.
Yeah, maybe. I will say, I don't know how many people feel too bad for the Spurs, because it felt like they were the best team in the league for about 20 straight years. But
I mean, yeah. But it just, they're like one of those teams now, like you grew up and it's so silly, but like in college ball, we see it a lot where it's like, it just feels better when certain teams are good.
The
sport
seems
healthier.
Sure.
Like the Spurs just, when they're good, basketball just feels, NBA feels more normal. Like it feels better. It feels better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you think about that Alamo Dome game against the Warriors. Like if they were one of the best teams in the West, that game would have been crazy. Instead of it's like a 30-point blowout for the Warriors.
Yeah. A rare West Coast road trip win for the Warriors. They don't like playing on the road. Speaking of the Warriors, they could lose Bob Myers. Good piece by Sam Amick in The Athletic this week. Just how much of an issue would it be for the Warriors? Like, how concerned are you about the immediate future? Because I think this coming out now makes you wonder more about, like, okay, we all just kind of penciled in the Warriors were going to figure this out. They were going to maybe finally admit that the James Wiseman experience is not gonna match up with what they need right now to get back to the finals and do what they need to do. Steph's having another MVP type season. But I don't know. Like, you see that and you're like, okay, are they starting to get cold feet about really paying all this money for Bob Myers, for Kerr, for this group, keeping this core together? You just paid Jordan Poole. Like, I don't know. It just, it feels a little bit more uncertain than the Warriors have ever felt in the Lacob, Kerr, Steph, Myers era. And it's like, if they really lose him, like, where would he in, where would he actually go? But like, that affects how they approach the deadline, right? Like, if they're not certain if Bob Myers is going to be around, or Bob's not certain he's going to be around, is he going to make a big trade to keep this thing humming? Is he going to stay in pat? Like, I don't know. I just think the Warriors situation, and people have just penciled them in as like, they're going to figure it out because the West is so cluttered from 4 down to 13 or whatever, that like, oh, they'll figure it out and they'll go on a run and they'll climb back into that 4 or 5 spot, which is all they need to be contenders once again. Because what were they last year in the playoff seeding? Were they 4? I feel like they were 4.
Third or fourth sounds right. And right, because they played Denver in the first round and Denver was like the 5th seed, I think. I think that, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. So they want to get there. But I also just am like, I don't know if it's a slam dunk. I don't know if you can just not do anything and think that you're going to get there and it's going to turn on. We got 30 games left, give or take. I don't know. Are you more concerned about where the Warriors are headed right now, Scott?
It's funny. I did we talk like a month ago? And I feel like we talked about the Warriors for a while and we talked about like, how concerned are you? And I wasn't concerned at the time. I don't feel that different at this point. Like, I don't know if we've learned that much about them since then. Like, their starting five is still one of the best in the league by net rating. Like, when their five best players are on the court, they are really, really good. Jordan Poole has had moments lately where I feel like he's kind of played at the level, at least that they hoped he would get to. And then it does feel like their depth has been sorted out a little bit. Like, Dante DiVincenzo has had a good run lately. Jonathan Kuminga feels like he's kind of found his footing. So suddenly you've got like 8 or 9 deep on that roster, because the bench really was a big problem at the start of the season or the first half of the season. So I feel like there's certain stuff there, and they've been really good at home. But the road stuff and how much they've struggled to win away from Golden State has been weird. And Anthony Slater had it written down after their last win that was their win over the Thunder was the first time this season that they've won back-to-back games on the road, which is crazy. It's the end of January, and this team is the defending champions. It's just been a very weird season to date. But in saying all that, I mean, what are they right now? Fifth in the West, a couple games out from a top 4 seed. They're getting healthy. You know, Steph's missed time, he's back. Wiggins missed time, he's back. They're another team where I feel
17th, though, in offense and defense.
Yeah, right. And then last season defensively, they were around the same offensively last season, which wasn't a surprise, just given Klay didn't play most of the season, Steph missed some time, Draymond also missed some time. But defensively, they finished, what, 2nd defensively last year? They were just fantastic on that end of the court, and they haven't been that this season. It's also like the thing I could just keep going back to is it's so hard to make it back to the finals in back-to-back years. Like, you just don't see it that often. And we kind of just took it for granted with LeBron, but LeBron is just one of a kind. Like, that stretch he had when he made it to the finals, what was it, like 9 straight seasons? We probably won't ever see anything like that again. It's just really, really hard to play that late into the calendar in back-to-back years. So they're another team where I feel like it wouldn't hurt for them, obviously, to make a move at the trade deadline. I just don't necessarily know what that move is. Like, I feel like I've seen Warriors people say they want to go after, like, Alex Caruso, which he would fit, like, that Gary Payton, the second role of what he brings defensively, and he can kind of fill in some gaps offensively. He's also just a really smart player. Like, I think that kind of makes sense, but I don't know if that's the answer. Kelly Olynyk is another guy who it feels like has been linked to the Warriors since the start of the season.
He's entering the Anderson Barjau era of his NBA career.
I mean, I think he'd fit in really well in Golden State. Like, how he moves the ball, his ability to space the floor. He's pretty crafty around the basket, all that kind of stuff. I think he'd fit in really well.
Getting a lot of fights in a playoff series.
What's that?
He would get in a lot of fights in a playoff series. I feel like him and the Draymond influence, like, I think Kelly Olynyk would get in some scuffles come playoff time.
Probably. So I don't know. It goes back to what I was saying at the top. Like, I just don't know what to make of these teams in the West. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, would you be surprised if the Warriors are back in the finals? After all of this? Yeah.
No. Steph's still playing at an MVP level. Like, Steph's still good. Like you said, the starting lineup is still one of the best. They're plus 19.6 with Kevon Looney and company. It is funny. What would you guess the two worst lineups include of the Warriors this year?
Poole?
No. Wait, hold on. You caught me off guard. Yes, Poole is on both of them. But the other name who is in both of those terrible lineups?
I don't want to say Clay, but is it Clay?
No, it's James Wiseman.
Okay, well, that's not a surprise.
James Wiseman, like, I go through, like, all these different lineups, like, year over year, and I'm like, there's just no good ones. Like, James Wiseman is not in any good lineups. The minutes have never been positive for the Warriors, and it's like, you cannot keep waiting. Like, there's just the path to getting him enough minutes to, like, working through the Kinks and building that chemistry and getting on the same page with the main guys. I don't think it's ever going to happen. And the back and forth of the G League, I don't know if that's good for confidence. I don't know. Like, I don't know who the right team is. I mean, if you were ever, like, going to just do a buy low, but, like, if I had to, like, think of anyone around the league that I would be most intrigued by trading James Wiseman to, it's actually the Raptors. Like,
really?
You know, they were talking about, like, Jakob Poeltl, but, like,
yeah.
Nick Nurse and that development, what they've done with their bigs, like, there's no expectations there right now. Like, they're all about just giving you opportunities. You play a bunch of minutes. Like, if you're in that eight, like, if you're Kim Birch, you're playing a bunch of minutes or you're not playing at all. Like, I think that could be the best potential option, but I don't know if that's enough to bring in, like, maybe that's Gary Trent Jr. Maybe you do Wiseman for Gary Trent and you make it work some way like that. It's just another shooter. And I don't know. That would be something intriguing to me. I know that it would hurt Warriors fans to, like, sell that low on a lottery pick and someone that important. But, like, we're nearing the end here. Like, you're going to have to pay Wiseman or something very soon. Like, this is the end. Like, the Wiseman era, unfortunately, is just not going to go this way. Like, other teams have had to bite the bullet earlier, and the Kings are fine. They're going to be a top four seed, but they were like, oh, they moved Marvin Bagley. And that was, like, pretty apparent early on, like, this is not going to happen. And he's fine, like, as a third or fourth big in Detroit. Like, he's finding his footing a little bit, but, like, it's not going to happen. Like, he's not going to be a cornerstone piece in this roster. And I think it's just been harder for the Warriors to admit that, like, he's just not a cornerstone piece. But if you were to be able to flip him for Gary Trent Jr., something like that, I don't know. I think it'd be a good fit. Like, I would like to see something like that happen.
Over on NBA Canada, we've been doing, like, I've been presenting fake trade packages to people on our team and basically been like, who says no? So for we've done it for Pascal Siakam, we did it for OG, and we did it for Fred VanVleet. Mm. I had a Warriors Pascal Siakam trade.
Okay.
I had Siakam, Otto Porter Jr., and Ken Birch for Draymond, James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, and Moses Moody.
I think the Warriors say no.
You think so?
I don't think the Warriors are going to move Draymond until it's like Draymond asked for the Warriors to move him. I think
he could be gone. He could just walk in free agency though.
Which is fine. Like, you have to let that happen because he's been the heart and soul of that team.
It's
like,
fair.
Even
it's totally fair. Yeah.
I just don't think that. I think there'd be a revolt. Like, I really do think there'd be a Warrior fan revolt if you move Draymond Green.
I mean, Draymond is so important, by the way. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying this is in, like, they need to trade Draymond. He's still so important to what they do on both ends of the court. Like, I know everyone likes to make fun of Draymond and what he doesn't do offensively. Mm-hmm. He still has a ton of value there with his passing and all that kind of stuff. He's just such a smart player. But that's the one I had for Pascal Siakam to the Warriors, which I thought was interesting. But it's funny you said the Raptors. I hadn't really thought about them as a potential Wiseman destination. I wonder if they'd go for it. He'd also, like, match up with Scottie Barnes' timeline. Yeah. They obviously need a center. The team that I keep thinking about for him is just Charlotte. Like, that, I feel like they just make the most sense of.
Well, you just drafted the kid who I like.
That's true.
Williams from Duke, who could be a good player for them.
Yep.
Playing a little bit more.
I guess it just depends on how high you are on Wiseman. Like, do you still think in the right situation with the right reps that he could grow into kind of this all-star caliber player, or are those days just gone at this point?
Like, the Heat just trade low for him and they, like, just turn him into Shaq. Like, the Heat just bring him in and they're like, yeah, we're just going to murder teams with Bam and Wiseman on the block. Yeah. We're like, we're going to be the most physical front court in the NBA and it's going to be ugly as hell. Can you imagine an offense where it's like James Wiseman, Bam Adebayo, and Jimmy Butler are just pulverizing you over and over again? Like, that's your cool. Oh my God. That'd be the most Miami thing possible, to bring in Wiseman and just really just say, we're not shooting threes, we're just going to draw 75 fouls every single night and put you in the blender. Like, that's what we're going to do.
It's tough, man. It has been, I do feel for Wiseman, because I feel like it has been a weird situation for him, especially for a guy who, like, he didn't play in college. Didn't he play like four games in college?
Yeah, he got ruled ineligible pretty early on.
Yeah. So it's just like, I think it was pretty clear from the get-go that it would take him some time, he needed some reps and everything. And really, Golden State and the way that they play, they kind of just need him to do, like, two, three things.
Yeah.
It's like, protect the rim, run the floor, and set screens and roll to the basket, which sounds very simple, but I think we've talked about this before, where it's like, to be good at the simple things in the NBA is actually, I feel like, really hard, and it's just super valuable. So it's just, I do feel for him for a bit, because I do feel like it has been a tough situation overall, and that's not even getting into like the injuries he's had and all that.
For sure. Couple quick things. Bojan, where would you like to see him go? Do you think the Lakers are the most fun spot for him? Like, would you give up at least one protected first for Bojan at this point based on how well he's played? Do you think he goes down a little bit if he goes into a non-Detroit incubator? I don't know. Is the Lakers the best team for him, or do you have somewhere else in the Who Says No sweepstakes for Bojan Bogdanovic?
Scott. I will say, I think he would go down a little bit if he got traded to a team like that. He also played in Utah next to Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and was really good. Like, I think he's kind of proven he can still be an awesome like third or even like fourth option on offense. So I feel like he's just super malleable and can fit in kind of almost anywhere. The team that comes to mind for me for him, though, is Dallas. On one hand, like I think Dallas would be better off going for someone younger who fits Luka Doncic's timeline better, and like you can kind of build something more to the future with them. But I just think Bogdanovic right now would fill in a lot of gaps for what this team needs. Like, Luka needs help, and I think having a guy who can do enough with the ball in his hands to take some pressure off of him, but also can excel off ball as a shooter, moving off of screens, everything like that, I think he'd be a really good like number two on this kind of version of the Mavericks.
So what's the deal? I'm looking at it right now. So I think to make this all work, I would do Dorian Finney-Smith, and then I'd probably do... You're taking Bertans. Like, it's like we're not doing any of this until you take Bertans. Like, that's, it's got to be Davis involved. And a trade that's successful is Hardaway and Bertans for Noel and Bojan. That helps in multiple ways. Like, you get Nerlens Noel, just another big defensive big. I would like him in Dallas. But yeah, I don't mind that one. That's interesting. I don't know if the Pistons would do it, but like John's been on the block for so long that like I would like to see what a closing five of Okongwu, Bojan, DeAndre Hunter, DeJounte Murray, and Trae Young playoff series looks like. Like, I would like to see that kind of shooting, and then if you need to interchange DeJounte or DeAndre for Bogey on different possessions, that's also another thing you have at your disposal. And then obviously you can flip Onyeka or Clint Capela depending on who's playing better at that particular point. But I don't know. I would not hate, and I feel like that's more what Detroit's looking for, is like those kind of ready to win now players with Dwayne Casey, and kind of jumpstart this rebuild a little bit more. And I wonder if John, and I love John Collins, he's the leader of this team and just so important, and I'm concerned about the locker room with John Collins not being in the room, because he's been in trade rumors for so long, but he's pro and just a likable dude and just the real actual leader for this team the last few years. But I don't know. Would that intrigue you if you're Detroit? And would that intrigue you if you're like, okay, the Hawks in the playoff series, like Bojan at the four with rim runner, like Onyeka, and then a couple good shooters and DeJounte and Trey, and like, would that move the needle at all for you for the Hawks?
I definitely like the idea on paper, and I realize I just said that Bojan could play next to basically anyone, any team, any situation. But I do wonder if playing next to Trae Young and DeJounte Murray specifically kind of freezes him out too much on offense to the point where he's basically just a spot-up shooter.
That's like, all we need. You're spot-up. Like, DeAndre Hunter on one side of the corner, and then Bojan at the other, and then just rim running and everything else. And then it works because DeJounte and Trey, when they close, they just take turns, and they get frustrated with each other when it's two straight possessions of Trey messing up, and then DeJounte is like, well, now I have to take a pull-up three, and then I'm going to miss that, and then the game's over. And is that what happened against the Clippers on Saturday night? Well, who's to say? Who's to say that's how it ended? Because it's not going great, Scott. It turns out, like my summer thing, where I'm like, Trey can say all the right things, and look, Trey's a great player, but Trey, it's just different when these guys who have such high usage rates say like, I want help, and then they're like, I want to win, blah 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 blah. It's easy to say that in the off season. You're like, I want another all-star guard, and it's like, awesome, you got me DeJounte Murray, this is going to be great, I have another guy I can trust. It's like, well, do you understand like what made him great? Like, part of this is like, you're going to have to take a more of a backseat. Like, this is going to be uncomfortable, you're going to do things off the ball. Like, it sounds so good in the summer. Like, it's those summer conversations where it's like, oh, the backcourt, we're going to stagger these two, it's going to be great. It's like, well, no, you still have to close with them. Like, this is still going to be a closing situation, and they still were in end of January, and they haven't figured it out. Like, it's just not, it's not easy. It's not comfortable for these two. And I totally get it. Like, DeJounte is also just, we're going to go ahead and say this, much better player than Trae Young at this point. Like, it's not even close. You watch these games, DeJounte Murray is the best Hawks player. It's not even close. Like, it is not particularly close. DeJounte is so good on defense. His shot's been great. He's great in the mid-range. He does all the little winning plays. Number two is AJ Griffin. AJ Griffin's the second best player in the Hawks right now. That man I trust more than anybody else in the Hawks to get their own shot. He is so smooth. He had this great cross on, I think it was Kawhi on Saturday night, where he is such a brilliant shot creator for his age. I'm so high on AJ Griffin. He should be starting at this point. I love AJ. Like, his shot's clean. He shoots super well. The jumper looks crisp. And he's a great defender. He's huge. I like his length. He's played really, really good basketball, and I'm big. This has turned into the ending of the Hawks podcast, but I had to get out my thoughts, Scott, because they've been frustrating me, and that's where I'm at with the Hawks right now.
I don't know what it is. Every single time on this pod, I feel like I spark like a 10-minute rant in you about the state of the Hawks. So I apologize, but I also think
I don't know what it is, Scott. I just it's like a sounding board. It's like I need to get it off because no one else wants to talk to me about the Hawks. Like, I don't have anybody else in my life who I can just like yell at and be in here in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I'm just like I need to get this off my chest. I'm the only one in Knoxville, Tennessee, watching every Hawks game each week and just losing my mind. Who also lost again to the Blazers last night and fell two games below 500. So go Hawks. Scott, what can the good folks check out from you over at NBA Canada, Sporting News, and all that good stuff this week?
Gil and I, we have NBA Sound System, our podcast that we do every single week. So we did, we picked our reserves for the All-Star game. Surprisingly, I think we were 13 out of 14 without sharing our list beforehand. So that was kind of surprising. So we have that. And then really a bunch of trade deadline stuff. As I said, some of these Raptors trade packages for these guys, seeing if they're going to be sellers. That's been a fun exercise. And, you know, don't know if you've heard, Chase, but LeBron's about to pass Kareem in the all-time scoring list.
So I have
there's
heard
a lot
that.
Of eyeballs on that, and we'll be doing a lot there.
I've heard that he may be, like, I was listening to Chris Haynes and Mark Stein, who have a new podcast, and they were talking about it where it's like, hunch, hunch, wink, wink as to why LeBron missed Brooklyn. And certain, like, we're now at the point where LeBron's just going to pick and choose to, like, make sure he gets the scoring mark in Los Angeles at home against the team. Like, it's so choreographed. It's like, you're in a playoff chase. Like, what are we doing? Like, wait, you're fighting for your playoff lives, and we're just doing, we're going to pick and choose when I play to make sure I land in the right spot when I break the record. And I kind of get it. I respect it. It's a flex.
February 9th against the Bucks on TNT. Happening. 100%.
So that means he's going to have to sit some then, right? Like, he's going to have, because how close is he? How many points?
I think he's basically four games away from passing Kareem. And that Bucks game is five games away. So I'm not a betting man, but I would bet that he sits one of these next four games and he breaks against the Bucks.
What if Kareem doesn't come? Like, it's all been
he's gonna be there, right?
What if he doesn't? Kareem's interesting. He's got a Substack. He's writing away. What if he's like, I'm under deadline tomorrow? Like, sorry, can't do it.
He's staying up late to write that article about LeBron passing him. I think he'll be there. I think he'll be there.
Yeah. I don't know, but I will say in the end thing, Chandler Parsons had a great quote about that where he was like, I don't know if I would have reacted that way with LeBron with the no call against the Celtics on Saturday night if my French bulldog got run over right in front of me or something. I still don't think I would have reacted. That was something I reacted in the moment where I saw, because I was at the Hawks game, so I didn't see it live. And I saw it, I'm like, this is a little crazy. Like, this was overtime. This is a regular season game. But he really, really got upset. Like, that was one of the more upset, like, crazy stories. And Patrick Beverley was obviously hilarious with the camera. But, like, I thought it was a little overdone. I'm like, you're still going to overtime. Like, it was a bad no call. But, like, this is not game seven in the NBA Finals. Like, what are we doing? Like, this was a little over the top for me. I thought that was a little weird.
Even then, I was saying to Gil when we recorded the other day, like, that, I feel like that's one of the most animated I've ever seen LeBron. Like, he didn't even react like that when J.R. Smith messed up at the end of game one of the finals.
Like, there's so many other moments where you could have reacted like that. I'm like, regular season game against Boston? All right.
He did talk about it after, though. It does feel like it's been a buildup of, they've had four pretty rough calls over the last 2 weeks. And I know a lot of people like to make fun of the Lakers and say, you could say for any team that, like, if they'd won four games in a row or whatever, they'd be in a completely different position. But, like, the four calls that have been controversial over the last 2 weeks have literally been, like, in the last, like, 10 seconds of a one-possession game. Like, this is make or break kind of thing. So I'm not surprised that he was frustrated. But, I mean, yeah, I don't remember the last time I've ever seen LeBron that animated.
Yeah. Scott Rafferty, always a pleasure. You have yourself a great rest of your week. Keep up the good work, my friend. Stay healthy, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, you too.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Chase, I think I'm going to hear more about you. I really do. I think you've got a way about you, but you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. Pleasantness, you're smart. So I think I'm going to hear big things about you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.